You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Daily Vet Life Podcast, where we chat with equine veterinarians about the cases they've worked on in their clinics. I'm your host, Alex Beckstedt, Editorial Director of Equimanagement, and today I'm speaking with Dr. Alvaro Bonilla about using a standing surgical approach to remove fractured splint bones in horses. This episode of the Daily Vet Life Podcast is brought to you by DECRA. Dr. Bonilla obtained his veterinary degree in 2005 from the University of Cordoba, followed by two internships in Spain. He then moved to Canada, where he completed a surgical internship at Milton Equine Hospital, followed by an orthopedic research fellowship at the University of Pennsylvania. After this training, he went to the Ohio State University, where he obtained a Master of Science focused on the stifle and subchondral cystic lesions, while also completing an equine surgical residency. In 2015, he became a diplomat of the American College of Veterinary Surgeons. After finishing his residency, Dr. Bonilla spent time working at the Ohio State University, the University of Montreal, Charles Sturt University, and Langford Equine Center before joining the busy surgical team at the University of Montreal, where he was exposed to a very high and diverse caseload in soft tissue and orthopedic procedures. Dr. Bonilla joined Tennessee Equine Hospital in 2023, where his main fields of interest are standing arthroscopy and standing surgery, subchondral cystic lesions in the stifle, orthopedic and arthroscopic surgery, sinus surgery, and minimally invasive procedures, among others. Thank you, Dr. Bonilla, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So I'm excited to learn about your approach to removing fractured splint bones in horses, because you're performing it on the standing sedated horse, which I understand not many surgeons do. Can you tell us how long you've been performing this procedure, or give us some background on how you got started?
Yeah. So I probably started doing those maybe 7-8 years ago, while I was still at the University of Montreal. And, you know, I mainly did it because some clients will decide not to do the procedure and do the conservative route just to avoid general anesthesia. And the problem that we have with the conservative route, with in many cases, is just to wait and see if the splint bone can heal by itself, which in some simple cases where the fractured piece is not very displaced, it will. But it's a little bit sometimes hard to anticipate which ones are going to heal, which ones are going to form a lot of callus. And all of that takes you to two scenarios. One is that it takes 2 to 3 months for the bone to heal. And the other one is that when a bone heals with a lot of callus in that area, it will impinge with the suspensory ligament and you will end up needing surgery no matter what. So when we started offering the procedure standing, I saw how a lot of clients that were initially hesitant to do the procedure under general anesthesia, they will be very keen to actually do it standing because of, you know, reducing not only the anesthesia, but as everyone knows, general anesthesia and the recovery especially carries some risk for horses. And you will skip all of those and still perform a procedure with the same quality and very safely.
Calling all equine veterinarians. Are you tired of feeling like you're on an island when it comes to caring for your patients? DECRA Veterinary Products is here to bridge that gap. They understand the challenges you face. That's why they offer a comprehensive line of high-quality products like Zycosan and Osphos, and empower you to offer your patients cutting-edge therapies like ProVet APC. They're not just a supplier, though. DECRA provides ongoing training and support to help you stay ahead of the curve and deliver the best possible care. Visit www.decra-us.com to discover how DECRA can be your partner in equine health. So can you walk us through one of these procedures and the steps that you would typically take on one of these cases?
Yeah. The splint bone fractures are actually classified depending on what segment is fractured. So it can be the proximal third, the middle third, or the distal third. The distal third is the most common one that gets fractured, and it's usually a very straightforward surgery. You actually remove the piece. You don't try to do like in other fractures that you will go ahead and repair it. In most cases for spleen bone fractures, you remove actually all the piece of the spleen bone that is fractured. You, as a general rule, you can remove 2/3 or so of any of the spleen bones and then have a great prognosis. So as I said, most of them are the distal third or sometimes it's the middle third. There are 2 or 3 different procedures that you can do. You can either remove everything, or sometimes when it's in the middle, you can actually just remove the middle part and just leave the top and the bottom. And then what you basically do is you sedate the horse. You put the horse in standing stocks. And then after clipping the area very safely, you will prep it sterilely. I usually do this procedure with a tourniquet in place for 2 reasons. The first reason is because that way you avoid bleeding. The second reason is because at the same time that I'm doing the procedure, I'm doing a regional imperfusion with antibiotics, so I'm delivering a high volume of antibiotics in the area. And then after that, you know, obviously, I didn't mention that you also have to put local anesthesia in the area. So the sedation and the local anesthesia make the horse kind of be very relaxed and not feel anything. And the rest of the procedure is very standard for the standing surgery or the surgery under general anesthesia. So you just make an incision, detect the bone that is fractured, if needed, with the radiographic guidance, and then you just go ahead and remove the segment that is affected, and then close up everything, and that's it. And then place a bandage. Obviously, there are some little tricks. So you want to make sure, you know, the horse is well blocked and well sedated. You know, I'm on my mid 40s, so I'm more and more careful about all these procedures. So, for example, if it's a hind limb, I make sure I remove the shoes just in case the horse tried to kick. Has never happened to me, to be honest. But I do wear a helmet. I wear knee pads because I'm going to be on my knee. Now I just bought a chest or a vest that is an impact vest to just in case a horse kick me in the chest to kind of have some protection. So it's important to have some safety for you and the people that helps you. And obviously to make sure the horse is fully block and anesthetize in that area so it doesn't feel anything. And you will be surprised. You start kind of cutting bones and doing things that you will think that they're very painful, but with a simple local block, the horse actually doesn't move. I would say another thing that is key is that you have to be pretty proficient of doing this under general anesthesia before trying to do it standing, because you want to kind of move quick. In fact, you know, when I was at the end of my time in Montreal, we published an article because there were instant books, there were mentions that some people will do this procedure standing. It seems that nobody was doing it routinely. Probably more people is doing it routinely at this point, like I do it. But there was not really a comparison in terms of how much cheaper it could be doing it standing than under general. Is it takes longer or not? So we put, you know, around, I think it was around 60 fractures together. 2/3 were under GA, 1/3 were standing. And then we compare everything. And the surgical time was exactly the same. It was about $500 cheaper to do the standing, probably just because we're skipping the price of the anesthesia or the inhalatory anesthesia. And then the other outcome values that we compared, they were all the same, which, you know, it kind of meant that it's a reliable technique in the right hands, and outcome-wise, the horses will benefit from it.
Yeah, that's really interesting that you were able to compare those that much data. What is the typical post-operative protocol and recovery process for these horses?
Yeah. Thank you for the question, because I forgot to mention that, because that's one of the main things for some of the simpler fractures, because when you do conservative treatment, you're actually trying the bone to fuse. And as I said, that takes 2 to 3 months. When you do the surgical approach, which many people will do it directly, you actually have shortened the recovery period because you basically remove the fractured piece of bone. So you don't need to longer wait for that bone to heal. Once the bone is out of the equation, you just need the soft tissue to heal. So sometimes the recovery is as fast as 6 to 8 weeks before exercise can be resumed. So this is, you know, another advantage of treating these fractures surgically, either standing or under general anesthesia. Mm-hmm. And, you know, another big advantage, I would say the two biggest populations of horses where I see advantages are those with simple distal fractures, because you can do it, you know, depending on the area of the country, I would say probably for, you know, around $2,000 or something like that. And the other advantage is for very proximal fractures, which they do occur. And for proximal fractures, as I said before, you can remove most of the spleen, but not the entire spleen. And in some of these comminuted fractures, you cannot really repair them very well with a plate. So it really depends on the case. But in some of them, the ideal scenario will be actually to remove most of the spleen, and that's it. But when you do it under general anesthesia and you just leave a little bit of proximal spleen, you have the risk when the horse stands up and puts a lot of force on that limb, that little piece will look sick because of the ligaments attaching to it. So in those cases where you're very nervous because you are leaving less than a third or less than 20% of the proximal spleen in place, I've done a few of those standing where you actually leave just a tiny bit of the spleen. But the fact that the horse doesn't need to go through a recovery, and, you know, I haven't encountered to date any horse that has luxated, even if I left very small parts of the proximal spleen. And you do have to leave the proximal part just for stability. Otherwise, we will remove it completely, which is not the approach we recommend.
Right. Well, do you see this procedure being more commonplace now, or how many children do you see doing this?
Yeah, so I can actually give you some objective data. I did with my last resident, we did a survey that we sent to all the American and European surgeons. You know, at the time, there was about 800 surgeons listed that did large animal surgery. And then from there, we received around a 30% response rate, which actually for a survey is quite decent. So that 30% was only people that will do a standing surgery. So you have to count that from that other 70%, it may be surgeons that they don't do a standing surgery at all, or surgeons that didn't have time to answer to the survey. But from those people that are probably similar to me, so people that they are keen doing a standing surgery, a minimally invasive surgery, about 40% of them will do some sort of standing spleen bone fractures. So, you know, as I said, that other 70% of surgeons, I don't know what they do, but from the surgeons that do standing surgery commonly, about 40% of us will do this procedure. So, you know, I guess it's not extremely rare to find somebody that will do this for you, but it seems that at least up to date, it's not a commonplace either.
Right. Well, are there any other tips or recommendations that you would give veterinarians who might be interested in this pursuing this procedure?
Well, you know, I would say familiarity with the standing procedures. I think standing procedures could be scary at the beginning because you may think you're going to be kicked or you know that there will be a little bit of motion. So I think you have to be proficient in surgery and also familiar with the basic of standing surgery, which it means, you know, having a dedicated area that is very quiet, okay, so the horse doesn't get disturbed by movement. Obviously, that is clean and sterile, that you are familiar with the sedation protocols that will have the horses relaxed, but not knuckling over or anything like that. And then to be very familiar with local nerve blocks, because that's the key. If the horse is sedated and is not feeling anything that is happening in the head, in the leg, or anywhere else, that's when you can do all these procedures safely and you don't have any reactions from the horse that will, you know, jeopardize the life of the horse or anybody involved in the procedure.
Right. Well, I certainly learned something new today. I was not familiar with the standing fractured splint bone removal. So thank you, Dr. Bonilla, for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. And hopefully these kind of educates people out there that there are other options. And I'm sure if they ask the local surgeons, maybe they will go ahead and do it for them.
Absolutely. Well, that's a wrap on this episode of Daily Vet Life. Join us next time, and thank you to DEKRA for their support.